This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
For Steve Jorgensen, this is J. Douglas Barker, and today we'll be visiting with author Hardy Mead to discuss his book, The Bodacious Blessings of Balance, and it's released through Westbow Press. Welcome, Hardy.
Thank you.
On the back cover of your book, it says, "This is an easy read with some humor, but is mostly autobiographical in content. Explores the role balance plays in everyday life and how important it is to God." Also, you say, "I've been through what seems like a meat grinder several times in my life and have learned what does and doesn't work. Paying attention to someone who is sharing lessons learned in the fire of life's problems is easier by far than listening to a theory someone with no experience is laying on you. If you haven't done it, please don't try to teach it. If you've learned through experience, then you're qualified to be a teacher." Well, that's a great introduction to what seems to be a very positive book. How would you classify this book?
I think it's important that the people that you listen to are not just getting what they're telling you out of a book that somebody else wrote about their experiences. If you've been through it, you have a different perspective from the perspective you get reading what somebody else experienced. So I enjoy listening to and reading people who have had difficulties and have gotten through them and have learned by living it and then sharing what they've learned.
How do you classify your book? Would you call it inspirational, instructional, or all of the above?
I've been asked that question many times, and I don't know. It's just a sort of a commentary on what a life full of mistakes because of having no balance has ended up being like. I love to go to extremes. I said somewhere in the book that I take everything that comes to me and take it to Arizona. Mm-hmm. Well, from Alabama, Arizona's a long way off. So you might say I go out in the left field with things way too easily. But I've learned, hopefully, that moderation is a whole lot easier.
How have you learned to bring that back under control a little bit? What's been your key?
Well, if you realize the high cost of cheap thrills, then you'll quit going for the instant gratification and start paying more attention to, well, what's going to be the results? What are the consequences of what I'm doing here? What's the outcome going to be? And it's sort of a sobering thought a lot of times. So I've learned that if you count the cost, it says in the Old Testament, I can't remember the exact book, but a builder should count the cost before he starts building the house. Well, if you look at the whole situation before you go out and do something, then you might not do some of the things you do if you count the cost before you do them.
Yes. Your book has 21 chapters in 109 pages. Is that correct?
That's it.
Sounds like a succinct and very to-the-point commentary, biographical in nature.
Yeah. I just wrote about the things that have happened to me, and it's great to write history and all that, about a million jillion books have been written on histories and things like that, but a person's life, I know it's embarrassingly stupid sometimes to admit some of the things that I've done, but the bottom line is I'm still here and I'm 72, so I survived doing some of these crazy things, and I'm a whole lot better off for it.
What in the world were you thinking in writing this book? displaying all of your laundry?
Well, I'm glad you asked. About 20 years ago, oh no, 30 years ago, I felt an urging from God, I have to say, to write a book on balance because I didn't have any. And so I started the book, and after about 2 weeks, I thought, gosh, I can't do that. I'm not smart enough. I don't know how to. What business do I have, you know, and all these self-doubt things? So I just shoved it aside. And I never quite got away from the idea that I was supposed to do it. And I kept talking to my spiritual mentor off and on about it. And finally, I got into a situation where I had been through so many traumas in quick succession. I ended up in a wheelchair with a cast on my right arm from my fingertips halfway up to my shoulder, and on my right leg because I had broken my right heel and my right ankle, and I couldn't walk. I couldn't leave the house. I couldn't write with my right hand. I'm right-handed, and I couldn't even eat decently. And TV wore out in about 24 hours, and I couldn't hold a book very conveniently, and my sweet daughter brought me a Kindle to read on. And anyway, to make a long story short, I could sit at my computer and hunt and peck with my left hand only the story that I wrote. And it took about 6 months to do it, but I was in a place where I couldn't do anything. And I finally said, God, did you get me in this predicament so that I'd have to write this thing? And if you did, you better tell me what to write because I have no clue. And so I just started. And the name of the first chapter is A Few Boundaries. So I just decided, well, let's set some guidelines and then let's talk about some of your hurts, habits, and hang-ups. And we started with habits and then benefits and then what's on your mind and humor and relationships and worry and money and false balances and anger and forgiveness and life lessons and sensitivity and then a chapter on get serious and then Thanksgiving and then about mentors. I've had some incredible mentors. And eating for balance, watch your mouth, be yourself, are you hurting? And finally, the last chapter is the results. Chapter's really short, so I figured that my best audience might be people who want to take a book and go to bed with it, and they usually fall asleep pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
So the chapters are real short, so if you can stay awake for 5 minutes, you can read a whole chapter.
People like me who have a short attention span, that sounds like a good read.
Well, it's my favorite way to write. Now that I have written it, I've now started another book, I'm using the same theory that short chapters are better than long chapters. So.
Well, it sounds almost like it could be a devotional book as well.
Yes, it could be. Take 1 week and pick out something like Get Serious or Thanksgiving or Eating Too Much or just whatever you want to spend some time meditating on. Or if you don't have a problem with that, you can always apply the principles to life in general.
It says that you actually grew up in a very high social society group when you were younger, and that some of the activities, such as, I guess, money, booze, and social positions, got in the way of life. Is that a correct description?
Well, it distorts life. If you've had a silver spoon crammed down your throat, it's hard to understand exactly what life is really about, and God fixed me for that. I was uh, I was living high on the hog, so to speak, and had made a good bit of money. And my wife inherited a good bit of money. And we had a financial advisor that was doing very well with all this. And we had a very nice, nice home and two expensive cars and yada, 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 all the trappings. None of that makes you sleep well at night, and none of it makes you feel good about yourself, unless the most important thing to you is what your neighbors think about you or what your business partners think about you or whatever. And that's not really important. But what happened was I got a call one day from my financial advisor, and he broke the news that I was broke, that I had nothing. All the money was gone, and there was nothing I could do about it. Turns out that this trusted friend and compatriot for a number of years was running a Ponzi scheme.
Uh-oh.
And I was a victim. And so I went from extremely well off, ready to retire, no cares about money, to penniless. Lost my house, went bankrupt, lost the cars, sold all the furniture, sold all my wife's jewelry, down to nothing. And starting over at age 69 is not the easiest thing in the world. But you know what? You can do it. You can do whatever you make up your mind to do. You just lean on God and say, okay, God, now what's next? I can't worry about next week or next year. I'm talking about the next hour. What's next between now and an hour from now? Because if you have nothing and you don't know how to get something, then you have no place to turn but God. So God has got me on a trail of completely different life. And the things that used to be important, or I thought were important, aren't necessarily what's really important. And I'm a lot more interested now in, well, God, what do you want me to do? And then going out and, I don't know, planning another trip or whatever. Now, in defense of my lifestyle, we did a lot of things that were fun and family trips where I took my son and his wife and two children and my daughter and her husband and three children to Sun Valley, Idaho for summer vacations, and we did nice things for our family, and we knew that God wanted us to tithe and be givers, and we were, but it didn't really satisfy. If your mindset is always to get more, you know, it's kind of like the alcoholic saying, one drink is too many and 1,000 drinks aren't enough.
Yes.
So one successful situation might be too many, but 1,000 successful situations aren't enough. You still want more. And that's just a human condition.
It
People
is.
Always want more, no matter how much they have. And, you know, it's a sad commentary on the way we are. But I really think that's the way we are. It's the nature of the beast.
It's human nature.
So, yeah.
To always be searching and working and trying to achieve more than what you have.
Right. Always. More, more, more.
Are there five key messages you'd like to share with your readers? How would you recap your book?
Well, I want people to realize that balance is a feature that people mostly never think about it, whether their life is balanced or not. But it says in 1 Peter 5, 8, that be well balanced, for your adversary, the devil, roams about to and fro over the earth looking for someone he can destroy. Well, if you're out of balance, you're an easy mark for getting into bad situations. Hmm. And I would like for people also to realize that that balance situation applies to so many different areas of your life, that you need to kind of think through everything you're doing, and is this a balanced situation, or am I getting out in left field again?
We've been visiting with Hardy Mead, discussing his book, The Bodacious Blessings of Balance. Thank you, Hardy, for being with us today. Where can we get your book?
If you go on the internet, www.westbowpress, and type in my name, Hardy Mead, HARDIEMEADE, you can order it online. You can order it at your favorite bookstore. It's on all of the e-readers. You can go on Westbow Press to figure out how to get it on any of the e-readers. And it's available all over the country, anywhere you go.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing your inspirational story and your book. For Westbow Press, this is Jane Douglas Park.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on Toginet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, labellavitacosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central, on toginet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski. A live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen, Independent Book Publishing, and Westbow Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Today, we'll be visiting with author Barbara Kelly to discuss her book, The Woman at the Well, A Story of Redemption. Barbara, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Tell me a little bit about the book. What is the background? What was your motivation for writing this book?
I can relate to the woman at the well in a lot of different areas, and I was praying about being redeemed and restored, and I wanted to put into writing to help others what the Lord has done for me in my life and maybe give a hand up to somebody who doesn't know how to seek the Lord to be restored and redeemed.
And restored from what? What is the backstory? What does this story have to do with you?
Many people are hindered by different aspects of their life when they're children or adults, by domestic violence or molestation. different things that come against you to steal your identity and where you should be with the Lord. And in this book, I explain how you can overcome those things and not be a victim anymore, and to move on to do the things that the Lord has called you to do.
Did you start off in life feeling you were victimized by your circumstances?
Yes, from a very early age, I had been a victim, and I didn't realize until the Lord came into my life how much damage that had done to my self-esteem and my personality as a person and how I related to other people. And the Lord has restored and redeemed me into the place that He has called me to be, and I am no longer a victim.
When did that journey of restoration begin?
It's been a long process. I accepted the Lord Easter Sunday, 1980, and it's been a long process of learning and seeking the Lord and actually developing a relationship with the Lord instead of just reading the Word as a self-help guide. I had to realize what the relationship of the Lord and I have in order to overcome those things.
Now, the title of your book, The Woman at the Well, are you using that scripture passage from the New Testament to use it as a launching pad for the story that you recount?
Yes. It's from John 4.
And how does that relate to you?
I've gone through several relationships that ended in divorce, and it's been very shameful for me and kept me from being who I need to be to help other people. And the Lord has showed me that I don't have to live in shame and fear, and that I can move on, and the past is the past. And He has done miracles in my life, in my own personality, in helping me get over the fear and the shame, and I don't have to be shy or fear man anymore. I can move forward and do what He has called me to do.
Now, from a church and religious standpoint, are there controversial aspects of the message of your book?
Yes. The church in the past has frowned on divorce, and they haven't seen the people involved in the divorce and loved them as the Lord has wanted us to love each other. They have condemned people that have been divorced, and I am praying that through this book that many people will be set free of that. That isn't what the Bible says. The Bible says that we're to love one another and not to judge, and anyone can be forgiven and redeemed of anything that has happened in their life, and the Lord can turn all things to be used for good. So if you've had a bad experience in your life, whether it's sexual abuse, divorce, domestic violence, you can turn that around, and you can be who the Lord wants you to be, and you can use that to help other people.
The themes of your book, are there any that maybe stand out or that deal with life as it is in the current centuries?
Yes. Our culture is changing very rapidly. There are so many people in different situations, divorce, living together, having other issues in their life. I believe this book can help people to see it in real time and apply it to their life today, that they can learn how to develop a relationship with the Lord despite of the environment they're in or their past or their present. And I believe that God can do miracles in anybody's life who asks.
Now, would you call this a study book, an inspiration book, a devotional book? How would you describe it?
I would say it's an inspirational book, but the format of it is broken down into steps that you can take in the different areas that come with some of the things that can happen in your life. You can use it as a study book. Each chapter is simple. It's a quick, easy read. It gives you straight to the point things that you need to know on how to praise the Lord and prayer and how to deal with fear and shame. It's broken down as simply as possible and as short as possible so people that are busy today can get through it and glean something important for their lives.
Is there a specific goal or something that you hope to accomplish with your book?
When I was writing the book, I prayed about it and I told the Lord that, you know, if my book helps one person overcome different areas in their life that have hindered them from being who they need to be in the Lord, then it was all worth it. I don't have any expectations as far as, you know, making money or anything like that. I just want it to help people.
So your motivation was to share your story and help someone else who might have a similar need.
Correct.
And what was the hardest part of writing this book?
I think the hardest part was bearing my soul and allowing certain aspects of my life that are very private to be public, and the fact that there are probably people that are going to not appreciate what I have written in there about my life. There is nothing derogatory, but when you start getting into people's personal lives, people that are involved have a tendency to take it in the wrong way, and, you know, so probably bad reviews. I don't do it for man, I do it for the Lord.
And did you do any special research in order to get this book put together to publishing stage?
Yes, I did. I have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice administration, and I did a lot of research into the statistics of domestic violence specifically. In the first parts of the book, it gives statistics of how many people are victims of domestic violence. I've also done a lot of research into what aspects, getting professional counseling, what that can do for you, and what you need to do in order to get positive professional counseling.
If you were to introduce this to someone that doesn't know you as a writer, or as a Christian, or as an author, how would you describe your book?
I would describe it as a quick, easy read to help you move forward into the next phase of your relationship with the Lord.
And would this book also appeal to non-Christians or non-religious folks?
I would think so. It deals with issues that people who don't know the Lord go through also. I would believe that by reading the book that they would understand maybe the spiritual aspect of some of the things that have happened to them in their own lives, and they could apply it and maybe give them some thoughts of where their life is now and that maybe they need to discover the love that God has for them.
Do you also, in your book, include resources, such as, or suggestions or recommendations for people who are facing trauma and facing difficulties in their life? Such as counseling, like counseling centers and that type of thing.
There's no specific places that I put in there that they can go, but I believe that with help from the Lord, he can guide you into the areas that you need to explore as far as if you need professional counseling. You know, he can put people in your life that can help you.
Your book, is it different from others that deal with similar issues? How would you describe it?
I think it's different in the aspect that it deals with some of the personal things that I have had to go through and how the Lord has brought me through each step. One thing I haven't read in all the books that I've, the spiritual books that I have read, I haven't had anybody really deal with the shame that people go through if they have been a victim of sexual abuse or divorce or domestic violence. And I think this is unique in this area. I think it was a revelation from the Lord in how to deal with that shame and that we don't have to be ashamed.
Three words that describe your book you've written are broken, accepted, and redeemed. Sounds like a growth process to me. Is that how you would describe it?
Oh, definitely. I believe that everything happens in your life for a reason. I don't believe God ordains those things to happen in your life, but I believe that they can be turned around and you don't have to be broken anymore. You can be accepted and you can be redeemed into a new life serving the Lord.
You also mentioned that fear can destroy you and it's not from God. Shame can hinder you from moving into the place that God has called you to. And fear can destroy you and is also not from God. These are kind of universal truths that you've outlined in your book. Is that a good way to describe that?
Yes. I believe fear is so general in everybody's life that you need to realize where it comes from and that you don't have to live in fear.
Excellent. Well, the book title again is The Woman at the Well, A Story of Redemption. The book again is titled The Woman at the Well, A Story of Redemption, and the author is Barbara Kelly. Thank you, Barbara, for visiting with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And how can we get a copy of your book?
You can go to Westbow Press and order it directly from the publisher.
Very good. And do you have a website by any chance?
Yes, it's under construction. I do write a blog, though, that's up and running.
And how do we find that? The name of the blog is?
I'm sorry, I'm trying to find it. Dancing in Praise. blogspot.com.
Very good. Well, thanks again for sharing your inspiring story. For Steve Jorgensen, Independent Book Publishing, and Westbow Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ali Lopreet. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Lopreet, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
the choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on Toginet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and Indie Book Publishing. This is J. Douglas Barker. And today we'll be visiting with author William W. Bish to discuss The Ark's Cargo, released through Trafford Press. Welcome, Dr. Bish.
Thank you very much.
Well, since you are a doctor of veterinary medicine, should I refer to you as Dr. or Dr. Bish?
I would prefer Bill. Only when I'm working and facing tough decisions do I call myself or have people call me Doctor.
All right, sir. I will call you Bill.
Great.
A recap from your book kind of outlines this. It's a memoir describing the challenges of a young man facing achieving his dream of becoming a veterinarian. Even a period of homelessness and limited resources do not interfere with his commitment to achieve success. And this is only the beginning. Sounds like an intriguing read. How would you describe your book? What exactly is it that you've written here?
Well, really, it's about the experiences I've had as an international veterinarian, and I just thank God that I was able to grow from homelessness to the point that I was able to go to college, paid my way through, and then have the experiences of an international veterinarian. But I'll tell you, Jay, the main thing is that I enjoyed working in the developing countries of the world where the needs are greatest at this point in time.
And you worked there as a veterinarian?
Yes, sir. I worked with the governments, with the industries, and with the people. And what a blessing it was, because in so many instances, the people so appreciated our working together as a team that they would provide little parties that at times I would think were probably disasters, but for them they were giving the best they had, and at such times, I must admit, the tears would come to my eyes, and I would just feel the emotion of how grateful they were.
Tell us a little bit about your history and your upbringing. I noticed in the biographical notes that you come from a Jewish and a Christian heritage.
That is true. My great-grandmother and grandfather were Jewish. And then great-grandfather, he passed away, and so my great-grandmother, she married a Lutheran. And so we have a little combination there, and it's interesting. My mother said that once a Lutheran, always a Lutheran, and she could never figure out how I became a Baptist. So we're all changing in our life.
From my perspective, people's denominational labels sometimes get in the way of really getting along in this world.
You are so right.
How would you classify your book?
I would classify it as a book that describes the experiences in trying to improve animal health with the expectation that it would improve human health, especially in those areas of the world where they have so little to eat or to live with.
You mentioned that you were homeless. What age did that take place, and how did that impact your education?
Well, that occurred when I was about 20 years old, and I had no money. I had no hope. Well, I said I had no money. I may have had some change in my pocket, but it was one of the most scary times of my life. But through a faith and through a few contacts in a strange city, lo and behold, a county agent put me in touch with a farmer, and the farmer and his wife invited me, even though I was willing to live in their barn, they invited me in their basement. And I lived there, even though when it rained, it had 2-3 inches of water in the bottom. And they fed me 3 meals a day, and I was so grateful and will always be eternally grateful to them.
Explain to our readers how it was you came to write this book and what motivated you.
Well, when you look at the amount of malnutrition in the world, when you look at the number of starving children, it impacts quite heavily. But that alone wasn't the only thing. I don't think much of the world realizes, especially, I should say, in the United States, that probably over 50% of the world citizens or world individuals still rely on animals for transportation or for traction in their work. And the thing is that the other aspect of it is that in my work I saw some inhumane treatment, and that unfortunately was in the United States, and it dealt with things like soaring the pasterns of Tennessee walkers or working with the wild Mustangs. And so I thought I had a story to tell, and especially to tell to my children and grandchildren.
The title, The Ark's Cargo, where did that title come from?
Well, my grandmother loved to tell biblical stories, and her favorite one was Noah's Ark. And it talked about all these animals, and she would put all kinds of emphasis at different parts with the thunder and the lightning, and she'd flash the lights in the living room, and all us kids would look in awe. And I must say that that treatment, along with the idea of living on a farm early in my life, brought it to a point that I really desired to work with animals.
She sounds like she was a charming lady.
Oh, I think so. Of course, I'm very prejudiced in that regard.
Your book, who do you think it would appeal to, and what's the reason that it would appeal to them?
Well, I wrote it for the general public, in the point that there's a lot of things in the news now, like about avian influenza and the connection with the poultry, or with E. coli and salmonella and all the different disease entities that can play a role in our thinking in the media today. But I also have a story to tell there where I think in many instances we don't realize the impact of disease. In the United States, for instance, with avian influenza, those that are not attached to poultry amount to deaths in the human society of between 17,000 and 42,000 individuals per year. And so I thought I had some information that might be welcome to the general public, as well as the joy and fun and the trouble I was able to get into in my work.
That health report that you just gave, that's not widely reported, is it?
Well, it seems that industry or the medical profession is, or let's maybe say the media is more interested in mad cow disease, which unfortunately has killed a few people. But in the total time since 1988, it has only killed less than 500 people. And let's think about how serious is that when we look at avian influenza killing up to 30 or 40 some thousand people in the U.S. every single year.
That's a startling number.
Right.
Your book, how long did it take to complete the process of writing your story?
I'm slow. I started in 2004 and I just finished it, so whatever it takes, right?
It's not always the length of the journey, sometimes it's the strength, and you did finish the book.
Oh, I so enjoyed writing it. It brought back so many memories of instances working in Haiti or in the jungles of Panama, where a man came out attacking me with a spear and towards my heart and a shield, or working in Colombia with the drug lords beating on me day by day.
Amazing. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Well, in Colombia, we wanted to take and work with the industry there to try to improve their productivity and to reduce the level of disease, especially in the areas next to Central America, to prevent the diseases from coming up into North America. And in the process, we had to work in the area that was dominated by the drug lords. And so with the embassy wanted us to provide them information, but we told them, hey, if we're going to work in that arena, we are working to do our job, and anything else we see or hear is nothing we know about. And we were fortunate in that we were able in less than 5 years to improve the productivity of that area by over 200%. And unfortunately, I got in trouble a few times with the embassy, such as when I first got there, I didn't want to ride in the embassy vehicles with their bulletproof windows and with a guard in the front seat with an automatic rifle checking everything out, getting out of the car before I did. And I says, hey, I'm not worth all that, and it seemed less safe. But with time, I agreed to work with the embassy, at least in that regard, but it scared me to death to ride in that vehicle.
Now, your life's work sounds commendable. Would you identify it as a mission or a calling, as some people refer to their careers?
Well, both of those terms probably are very similar. I never, never, never imagined when I went into animal health as a veterinarian that I would even work outside the United States. But then I became so interested in diseases we don't have that are of economic importance, and I started studying that, and one thing led to another, where I was working in these other countries, and it's almost, again, I'm very much a strong believer in my faith, that God led me in that direction, and I had no idea what I was getting into, and I'm so thankful for those experiences.
And you survived.
I'm still here. Can you believe that?
That's
amazing. In the North Atlantic, the ship hit rough storms, and we were bringing the first Chilean cattle to the United States. And the storm was so high, it looked like the waves were higher than the Empire State Building, but they probably weren't. And they were pouring over the ship, and we'd be submerged, then bounce the top, submerged. And I thought I wouldn't live through that. And yet the crew was so courageous that they would run out, and they would, where the cables were breaking on the containers holding our cattle, they would run out and put new cables on the containers when we were floated to the top and run in just in time. I so admired them, but I don't think I'd have that level of courage.
That sounds intriguing. I know the readers would enjoy the recounting of that story. How would you introduce this to someone who has not read any of your writings or heard of you before?
Well, I guess what I would say is that it's a book that is filled with drama. It is filled with adventures. It's filled with situational comedy. And to me, it's a joy to read. Of course, I had so much fun writing it. And I would encourage them to take and try The Ark's Cargo for the Love of Animals. And I think they would be glad they did.
What one thing would you like your readers to learn or take away from your work?
How important it is that we take and consider the importance of working with our neighbors around the world to improve their health and to fight the war on disease. And I would encourage us all to think more of the benefits of fighting that war versus the war we seem to have in killing each other over politics and religion.
Are there other books in the marketplace that are similar to yours?
Well, in researching it and with my work, I would say there are probably only 10 or 15 individuals in the world at this time or in the last 20, 30 years that have even worked with various cultures in animal health. And I would say most of them have only worked in one continent or two continents, where I've had the fortunate of being able to have the experience in just about every continent of the world.
That's amazing. What was the most challenging part of writing it? And the most fun and rewarding?
To work on it every day. I have too much fun with my grandkids.
372 pages, though.
I'm glad. I wanted to be sure the print was big enough for those of us that are around 70 or 80 years of age. So I think it's an easy read for those that are starting to lose some of their vision.
Excellent. Is there anything we haven't covered that you feel might be important for readers to know about your book?
Well, I'll tell you, there's so much in it, and each chapter is a different story. So it isn't something that you have to read chapter to chapter to chapter. You can put it down each night, and yet the overall theme is very consistent, and I think the value of that will remain in their minds for years.
Anything else you've been working on, other books in your future?
Yes, I have three other books. One is Governance from a Bureaucrat's Point of View. Another book is entitled, at least in my mind at this time, is Might Makes Right with a big question mark.
Mm-hmm.
And another book that I'm working on is about a man who was blinded at the age of 7 and told that there was no way that he could be a success in this world. And when he went to college to be a lawyer, the professors laughed at him and said that being blind, it was a total impossibility. And yet he graduated, he was licensed, he became a legislator in Georgia, he started two businesses for the blind, and he also became a lawyer for a leading university.
That is an amazing story. How soon do you think that might be released?
Well, I'm hoping that that will be released before the end of the year, maybe within the next few months. I have it over half written, and I'm most fortunate in that I know the man's wife. He has passed away, and she has provided me all of the books or all of the files that he had up in their attic, and so I've had fun reading through that and pulling it together.
We'd love to hear about that when it is finally released. We have been visiting with William W. Bish, author of The Ark's Cargo. Bill, thank you for visiting with us today.
Thank you.
And Bill, where can we get a copy of your book?
You can get it at Barnes & Noble. You can get it at Amazon.com. You can get an e-reader through Amazon.com. It's available in most bookstores if you just ask for them to obtain it from Trafford Publishing.
Do you personally have a website?
I do have a website. It is www.william, and then it goes into my last name, B as in boy, U-I, S as in Sam, C-H.com. And I am in the process of putting a blog on in addition.
Well, thank you so much for sharing this intriguing tale. It sounds like a wonderful read.
Well, thank you very much, Jay.
For Steve Jorgensen, Indie Books, and Trafford Publishing, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.